Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Appreciate everybody getting in today. Dave Bartu, it's Tuesday. You know that's what happens. And so he stays with us. The final two segments of Hour 1, and that's just kind of how it goes. Hour 2 is coming up, and we got, just a tremendous – got a great lineup of games on Saturday, tremendous lineup of guests all during the week as well. From inside the Auburn Tigers, Jason Caldwell coming up, talking Auburn. In just about 10, and then bottom of the hour, get Mike Craven, College Football Insider, Dave Campbell's Texas Football. We will talk some A&M, but we will also talk the general situation at SMU as it relates to all of us, because the SMU situation doesn't affect me. In fact, I look, all right, well, it looks like there's some ball players jumping in the portal. So, because my school could use them. So that's how we all look at play. It's not my program. Well, Rhett Lashley, what he's going through, that actually will be your program. It's going to be everybody. So, again, Mike Craven, Dave Campbell's Texas Football, we'll talk that. Longhorns ahead of the matchup with OU coming up over the weekend as well. There is a fairy tale going around in college football right now regarding one SEC quarterback. Have we heard the, I'm going to say, narrative? Narrative, to me, we used to call it something else. Bull spit? Oh, well, let's affect the narrative. Narrative is we're trying to craft someone's thoughts in a way that isn't 100% accurate. There is always context, folks. And I am on record, if you listen to the program, on the side of the fridge, you know it, folks. We've got rules. We got the sheet from the yellow legal pad. Life rules, sports rules. One of those sports rules, there is no position in sports where you get less of the actual play, what's going on, than just looking at a quarterback's numbers. There's always so much context. There's a little too much context going around with Spencer Rattler right now. Because I have, I don't think football is difficult. Do you know what you can do in football defensively? Here's what I was always my approach, and Chuck talking about his approach. Now, Bill Parcells, okay? He knows a little bit more, way more accomplished. Let the other guy make mistakes. Stand on the baseline, essentially. Let the other guy lose the game. Do you know what the first – I'm not kidding. You ask any veteran coach, what's the first step to winning a football game? Don't lose it. Don't lose it. And this is a sports rule as well. I have compared in one way, one very like bird's eye sort of general way. I have compared being a quarterback to a doctor in the one way that what is the first rule above all else for a doctor? What is the first priority? Do no harm. The first responsibility when you're in charge of somebody's health, do no harm. Okay, now let's talk about it. Folks, quarterback, do no harm. Which means no matter what, I can't have you turn the ball over. There are times it's a bad snap and it goes on the quarterback. The play comes in from the sideline with 8 seconds on the clock. Delay a game, number 12, offense, and the quarterback's like, I got the play at 8. There's always context. And with a quarterback, there's more than anybody else. With Spence Rattler, there's too much context. I'm watching South Carolina State and South Carolina last Thursday. And the Gamecocks won. Dan, I don't know if you watched. Did you watch any of it? They put half a hundred on them, and their offense is not, let's say, fully developed yet. They're still working around to what they're going to be. They put up 50, and so that's not nothing. Spencer Rattler had two more interceptions. Now, I will tell you, before I talk about the broadcast, because I know these people, and I'm not great friends with them. We don't go eat wings all the time, but I know Dave Neal and Aaron Murray. And I also understand that there is no reason, there's no upside to just being negative all the time. A little too much context for Spencer Rattler, because at this point, the context is explaining away how a guy completing six, how a guy that, if you look at where he sits right now, a guy completing 64% of his passes, which is kind of okay, but in their controlled passing game, it needs to be higher. Four touchdowns and seven interceptions? It's not good enough. Too many turnovers. And now let's get back to the context, because there's always context. At Thursday night, you know what context was? There was one pass that he went firing in about Mach 2. And the receiver, you have to turn around and have your hands up and be ready to catch it, because you're not playing. This is no disrespect. Guy started at South Carolina, sort of. Zeb Nolan doesn't have the same octane as Spencer Rattler. And so you, as the receiver, you're playing with a much bigger time quarterback now, which means you got to up your game. And if you don't, for instance, like Thursday night, you turn around, you try to catch a pass, it goes right off your hands, shoulder pad, boom. South Carolina State defender's like, hey, the football. That happens sometimes. It doesn't happen to the tune of four touchdowns, seven interceptions. And so there is this fairy tale. Like I said, I was watching the broadcast, and this is not Dave and Aaron exclusively, because, like I said, the pass goes off the guy's shoulder pads. It's just what happened. There also was another interception. Was it 100% Spencer Rattler's fault? Well, you know, it's kind of like Will Levis. I get tired of explaining how it's not all his fault. At some point, you're the guy with the football. Wasn't it Matt Corral that had 6 interceptions against Arkansas 2 years ago? Like, Matt Corral was just sailing along, and then they played the Hogs, and that kid threw really talented. He's going to be an NFL quarterback when he's healthy. In fact, given what the Panthers are, I think he would be playing. Like, they may be giving him a shot right now. They're a month into the season. They're looking around going, all right, well, we missed on Darnold and Baker. Whatever. So Matt Corral, he's an NFL guy. He threw 6 interceptions. I remember talking to one of my buddies over there, and he's like, well, this was the first one, and this was the second one, and this was the third one, and this, and all right, now the fourth one was on him. I'm like, wait a minute. You know what you can never say? And there were two more after that. Do you know what you can never say? First interception, second interception, third interception, quote, you can't say, all right, now the fourth interception I'll put on him. You got to get there before you get to the fourth one. So there is, so it's not just Thursday. It has seemingly been a week-to-week thing about Spencer Rattler needing help, and that's right, because it is not. He's probably, if you look at like metrics, scouting metrics and ratings and different abilities and just go beyond what he was as a recruit, I don't care about that. Not anymore. About his ability to perform physically on the field, it's off the charts. It is as, and I don't want to say NFL ready, because that's not my point. He's as big time a potential SEC game wrecker skill-wise as is on that roster. And he's not having a very productive season. So I understand what he's not playing with anymore. When he was at Oklahoma, he could look around and go, hey, look, a tight end who's just as good as I am. Hey, look, there's two offensive linemen. They're just as good as I am. He looks around South Carolina, and he's like, all right, I can date any girl here. So week to week, though, there is a total fairy tale that has developed about Spencer Rattler and all this pressure. All this pressure that Spencer Rattler puts on himself. All this pressure Spencer Rattler has shouldered for the program. All of this pressure from – Spencer Rattler is just like every other kid that jumped into the portal. He looked for a spot to land. He looked around at South Carolina in part because Shane Beamer's there, in part because he could get his tight end, whatever. He looked around at South Carolina and thought, this is a spot where this is a softer landing for me to succeed because I'm the number one quarterback recruit in America and things are supposed to happen for me. And so he looked at South Carolina, pressure? What? Pressure, like Justin Fields transferred to Ohio State and said, yeah, I'm going to run off everybody else too. When you show up at a place like Ohio State and other quarterback, like Jack Miller's like, I got something better to do. Tate Martell says, I have something. Miller was actually a year later, but no, it was a second year with Fields. So Tate Martell's like, yeah, I got to get out of here. When you show up at Ohio State where the goal isn't to play a 13th game, the goal is to play a 15th game, and you walk in, and the other quarter, well, I guess it's your job now. Okay, there's pressure. Do you know what doesn't have pressure? When you transfer to South Carolina and you are expected to be, what are the Gamecocks, folks? Fourth out of seven? Maybe fifth out of seven? All right, how many programs are in the state? Two. You're expected to finish second out of the two in-state programs. Where is this pressure that I keep hearing about with Spencer Rattler?
Also, too, Tate Martell, remember, at first told Justin Fields,
oh, God.
Hey, make sure you don't miss if you're coming here. And then Tate Martell ended up at Miami. Ooh, ended up at UNLV. Yeah.
Yeah, wasn't it the make sure you don't miss a second time? Or you missed at Georgia,
don't come here. Yeah.
Don't miss a second time. And then Tate got 2 seconds to look at. He's like, okay, I need to leave now. Mm-hmm. There's pressure. And how did Justin Fields respond? Yeah, he did. Now, Spence Rattler? See, it all comes around. Justin Fields is living Spence Rattler life now as well, except he's doing the Bears. Justin Fields looks around. He's like, okay, I can date any girl here because I am BMO. I am the best. I am the most important. I am a starting quarterback in the NFL, and I'm a young, exciting top draft pick. Chicago might be. Now, here's the tough part for Justin. That team's no good, and there is not – there's not a whole lot of talent around him. So I don't know that Justin's going to find a lot of success down there, despite what Trevor Lawrence turned the ball over the other day like it was the play call. Besides that, that kid looks like a star now. It's his second season. Get rid of the turnovers. Okay. That's Spence Rattler right now. He's looking around going, I am the best guy here by far, which was part of what he signed up for. And there is no pressure. I'm the starting quarterback at South Carolina. I got to live up to the history here. The history of who? Anthony Wright? You've got to live up to the history, the standards of the program. Really? The program that has shared an ACC title 53 years ago and won division championship in the SEC East? Like, I don't understand where any pressure resides. And Spence Rattler picked a situation that was supposed to be set up for him to be a star, and it's just not happening. And part of it is because he has 4 touchdowns and 7 interceptions.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Rolling through hour two on a Tuesday in the middle of the season, practically. We got playoff rankings coming out in a few weeks. Auburn was on the short end the other night, and I credited LSU. First thing out of my mouth, give the kids with the purple and gold credit. They won a ball game on the road in the conference, in the division. That's not nothing. Auburn has a lot of work to do, and I said that with LSU, here is what you need to know about Saturday if you didn't watch. They were +3 in turnovers and barely won against a team that can't score. So LSU has its own laundry list of what to get better at, but that's their issue, and it's against the backdrop of a dub. Auburn was on the short end. They were Missouri from a week earlier. Man, we could have won, but we didn't. Now we got to regroup. and it only gets tougher in the SEC. I want to welcome on a guy we love talking to. Been nearly a quarter century covering the Auburn Tigers. Does a great job, too. Today's Truist reporter, Jason Caldwell from Inside the Auburn Tigers. Jason, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, Chuck. How about you?
Doing all right. Let's talk about what happened against LSU the other night. Tell me the good of the 17-0 start, and specifically some of the passes from Robbie Ashford. There were some moments where he really looked comfortable and like an SEC quarterback.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that gives you some of the things that we saw from Bo Nix the last 3 years, where he can keep a play alive. And you know, a lot of those plays early on were him kind of a broken play, getting out of the pocket and finding a wide receiver. And, you know, obviously that's a big deal for this offense right now. The offensive line, not great. Thought they were better last week with Brandon Council at center. But, you know, Robbie Ashford's a guy that can give you some of those moments and give you some of those plays. And that's what this team needs. They got to find a way to create some explosive plays. They did more of that Saturday against LSU. The unfortunate part is they can't find those plays in the second half. And that's been the issue for this team now for going back to the middle last year. And it's hard to win in this league if you can't finish games, and that's really the biggest issue right now for this team.
God bless Brandon Council. He's giving it a go, but you're down to what would be your third choice at center, and for a young quarterback, it's just a tough equation up front. Just talk about the health up front and how that offensive line is looking right now.
Yeah, you know, okay right now. You still got, you know, the good thing is they had, you know, guys with experience. So you have a guy like Brandon Council who had played center at Akron before he came to Auburn a few years ago. So he has some experience there. And so I think you look and you're able to put Alec Jackson in, the guy that's played a bunch of football in his now sixth year at Auburn. And, you know, you've got Cam Stutz, a veteran. So you got some guys, including Keandre Jones, he mixes in as well. So you got some bodies. The problem is you just can't afford anybody else. There's just not a whole lot left for that offensive line. And if you were to suffer another injury, and yeah, so that's the case right now for them, is can they kind of hold it together and not getting any easier. This team hasn't played on the road yet, and now you get to go to Georgia and Ole Miss in back-to-back weeks.
Talk a little bit about Coy Moore. Looks like he's trying to come on and maybe be the guy over the past couple of Saturdays. What's his role and his talent, and what do you see this season kind of unfolding if he is – can he be that guy?
Yeah, I think he's a guy that will be one of the guys. I don't know that he's a number one guy. I think he can be a guy that mixes in there. Him and Javarius Johnson are the two best playmakers you got at wide receiver for this team. And both those guys made plays last week, and got to continue to get those guys the ball. That's the best opportunity to create some big plays for this team. And neither one of them are the big 6'4 guys that do those things, but they can get open and you spread the field. And we saw it last week. I think the best bet for this team is continue to try to spread the field and get some of those defenders out of the box.
Let's look over at the defense, because I don't want to assign anything, you know, ultimate failure to them. Auburn fans can remember some seasons, though. I'm trying to recall Tuberville's last season. Obviously, it got that way where the defense was really top-notch, but they just got flat wore out, and because the offense, the three and outs and all that. But Auburn's defense is not quite like that this year. In fact, there's some issues maybe on the back end. How is the secondary or the top five or six kind of shaken out? Because I know some of the names, but there's been some spotty production, let's say.
Yeah, I think they've actually been pretty good the last couple of weeks. I mean, they had LSU to 5 yards passing in the second half Saturday and lost the game. Yep. That's pretty good defensive play, and especially in the secondary. DJ James has been a newcomer from Oregon to transfer in. He's done a good job. And Keontae Scott, a junior college transfer, have added in with Nehemiah Pritchett, Jalen Simpson, those guys. And so I actually think they've come on pretty good. The issue now for them is how much help are you going to get up front? You lost Eku Liotta probably for the rest of the year, and not much depth behind Derek Hall there as a pass rusher for this team. And I know how important that is. And so that's the thing about them, is how much help are they going to get from that front seven, you know, moving forward.
Yeah, and I guess I'll go ahead and drill down. I'm going to name names. But there are some upperclassmen that I was looking at, and I was like, all right, he's going to start, and he'll be a major player. And whether it's a transfer or maybe some younger kids, I mean, you mentioned him, Pritchett and Jalen Simpson. I have been used to the depth chart at Auburn that you put your time in, and then after 2 years or 3 years, you kind of step in and be the guy. But there's some younger guys kind of putting a clamp on playing time back there.
Yeah, you know, all four of those guys. You know, Keontae Scott's inside more than nickel, and so those other three guys are all playing a pretty good bit. So they just not making many plays. That's the thing.
Okay.
You know, the secondary does not have an interception in five games for Auburn. The only one that's come from Derek Hall. That's it. And so you know, you make some plays, but if you don't have that ultimate play, it's hard to kind of get a whole lot of notice.
Quick word on Dylan Brooks, maybe some additional playing time coming up?
Yeah, well, I think it's a must now for them when you look at it. You know, behind Derek Hall, you got Marcus Bragg, Western Kentucky transfer. Dylan Brooks is the next guy. The only other scholarship player is Joko Willis, who was a junior college addition at linebacker, and so he's about 215 or so. That's it. And so Dylan Brooks is a guy that they're going to have to count on. He's only played about 18 or 19 snaps in the first five games. He's going to have to give them more moving forward without question.
All right, last thing for you. And I mentioned this actually yesterday, Kavassier Smoke, especially Quinshon Judkins. I'm sure you saw these kids in high school. What was the Auburn pursuit? And I'm not trying to cherry pick a couple of guys who went elsewhere, but sort of under, you know, they weren't five-star running backs, but they've turned into really good SEC players. What was Auburn's pursuit of those two kids, just as examples?
Yeah, you know, Kavassier Smoke was a guy they didn't really recruit a whole lot of. You know, that was a few years back, a guy from Wetumpka High School. Quinshon Judkins is a guy that Auburn recruited. They offered, but, you know, they got Damari Austin from Atlanta and already had a couple of guys. Yeah. So they never really said, hey, we're going to take you. But Quinshon was a four-star guy that at a big-time program at Pike Road that came on strong. And obviously you look at him and, you know, he's doing an exceptional job for Ole Miss early this season.
And you mentioned Damari Austin there. He's a kid going back, I think it was San Jose State. I was like, all right, he looks like he can do something. What's the idea for Damari Austin? Because he's explosive, man.
Yeah, the issue right now for this team is that they're just not able to get to those 40, 50 carry games because they're not able to run the football well enough. And when you get behind, you got to kind of abandon that a little bit. It's tough to get the third guy carries when you got Tank and you know, especially like Jarquez Hunter. I thought he played really well last weekend. So it's just a matter of the numbers right now for Damari Austin.
All right, Jason. Appreciate you as always, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
Today's Truist reporter, Jason Caldwell, inside the Auburn Tigers. So that's what it is for Auburn. The defense, it's about just hitting a shot play. Because the idea that Auburn's going to line up, I'm just giving you my opinion about what I've seen through the first 5 weeks. The idea that Auburn's going to line up and put together a bunch of 11 and 12 play drives, that's just not realistic. And the defense at this point, with some injuries piling up, you're going to have more of those big plays, field flippers, turnovers, et cetera.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart, and there needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com, and then call us for a free in-home consultation.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Well, I'm a little flummoxed now because I try to stay up on things in college football. But I have been inundated with questions about when's Jimbo going to turn over the OC duties, or when's he going to hire an OC, or will Jimbo fire himself as OC? And I'm like, I think Daryl Dickey, like that's a coaching name, folks. I think Daryl Dickey's still on staff there, unless he got fired. I don't know. But my question, why I say I'm flummoxed, is either the OC got fired and I didn't hear about it, or I can't figure out why this offense stinks. Because the A&M offense stinks. And here's what I do know about football. This is true about every team since Rutgers and Princeton played. If you block better up front, everything works. And so that's part of it. And you can't turn the ball over, and you have to make big plays, and your offense has to be something other than Devin Achane off tackle or Devin Achane on a return. It has to be more than that. With Texas A&M, and I got to say this, with Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher, that offense stinks. And I don't know the specific reasons why. I know somebody who may, from Dave Campbell's Texas Football. It is Mike Craven. Michael, welcome back, brother. How are you today?
I'm doing good, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Why is the offense stinking, College Station?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons there. I think you hit on it. The offensive line hasn't been very good, and you're absolutely right. You know, a bad offensive line can make any, you know, even a good scheme look bad. It just feels, just from talking to people around the state, other coaches in the state, just other offensive coaches that I know, you know, Jimbo Fisher's system is just too big. It's too thick. It's too complicated. Nowadays, quarterbacks graduate from high school. They're running mostly a 7-on-7 type offense. Think Cliff Kingsbury, Mike Leach, that kind of stuff here in the state of Texas. You know, I had an offensive coach, a head coach who's an offensive coach like Jimbo in the state, tell me that they install more on day one at A&M than this guy does the whole year. You know, and it's not about what the coach knows. It's about what the players know and the way players run football nowadays growing up through high school. There's just systems that are easier to pick up on. Even if we look at the NFL, you know, those systems aren't these old school, you know, what we used to consider NFL systems like Jimbo's. You know, they're running college systems. There's a reason Cliff Kingsbury is a head coach in college. You know, that system that he runs is more like what the rest of the NFL does than what Jimbo does. So for me, it's just kind of an outdated, archaic system that may be a little bit too much, a little too overbearing, a little too restrictive for modern quarterbacks, and he just hasn't adjusted to kind of run a more free-flowing, you know, more conducive offense to what, you know, guys are used to running these days, quarterback and wide receivers.
Okay. Texas is not in a situation like, you know, I use Apollo 13 as an example sometimes. You look like Georgia Tech last week, you look around, what's right with the ship? What is working here? Texas has a lot that I like. Why isn't it working more consistently at a higher level? And do you expect it to work this Saturday against Oklahoma?
Yeah, it's the weird thing, right? I mean, they're 4 points away from being undefeated, but, you know, we could say that about Texas all the time, yep, that they're just a play or two here or a close in here.
And they have some really good college game wreckers on that roster.
They do. They have outstanding player talent. It's not the issue. I think they'd argue that some of that talent needs to grow up at key spots, at like the offensive line and on the edge. They don't have a lot of experience there. But they're a team that can't win one-possession games. They simply can't close games. They've lost 5 second-half leads of double digits under Steve Sarkisian in 16 games. You know, and so, you know, the book right now on Texas is that they're not going to play a four-quarter football game. Joey McGuire went viral after the Texas Tech win, because in the locker room, he said to his players, I told you they'd quit, and they did. And that's the problem with Texas right now. It's a locker room that doesn't have a lot of confidence. It's a locker room that's kind of waiting for a really good thing to happen. I feel like if they could win one of those games, if they could close out a tight game, maybe that would turn the corner for them. But right now, it seems like they play not to lose rather than to win late on in games, and that's hurt them, you know, over and over and over again during the Sark era.
A couple more minutes. Mike Craven again. Dave Campbell's Texas Football. It means if it's pigskin in that state, folks, high school, I'm talking, it doesn't matter. If it's pigskin in the state of Texas, you're going to find it there. Mike Craven, college football insider. Let's talk about TCU. What's right with the ship, like everything? What's working for TCU right now?
Yeah, you know how, like, when you get let out of a really, like, strict parenthood, you just kind of can have some freedom and have some fun and enjoy
your
life.
Oh, you're wilding, I believe it's called.
Right, yeah. TCU is wilding right now. Like, they had been under Gary Patterson's thumb for so long, I think they forgot that football was fun. And with Gary being gone and Sonny Dykes coming in and Garrett Riley running that offense, they're starting to be explosive. They're starting to, you know, play modern football, kind of like what we talked about with Jimbo a second ago. Sometimes, you know, old isn't bad, but just sometimes you need something new. And there's a reason we move out of our parents' house, hopefully, after 18 years old. And I think, you know, after 18, 19, 20 years of Gary Patterson, they just needed something different in that room. They needed a spark. And Sonny Dykes and Garrett Riley have provided that. Max Duggan has been excellent. You know, they scored, you know, 41 points on Texas or on Oklahoma in that first half, you know, there. That Sooner secondary is really bad. So, you know, I'm going to hold judgment on TCU to see if they're kind of, you know, really a Big 12 contender or not. This is going to sound weird, but I think we learn more about them if they beat Kansas than if they beat Oklahoma.
I like fun quarterbacks. Donovan Smith looks like a really, really fun quarterback. And there's like five people listening who know who he is. How real is this at Texas Tech? Because I know him coming off a loss, and I like Adrian Martinez a lot this season. But talk about Texas Tech, because I didn't remember hearing the name Joey McGuire before he got the job.
Yeah, so Joey McGuire is probably a little bit bigger deal in this state than elsewhere. He won three state championships at Cedar Hill, which is now considered a powerhouse, but before they got there, it was really, really bad in the South Dallas area. So, you know, he's kind of been a program builder his whole life. He went to Baylor, helped Matt Rhule build what they built at Baylor. I would say that that Big 12 championship team that Baylor won with last year was about 80% guys that were recruited there by Joey McGuire. So he's always been a great recruiter. He's always been a great program builder. Donovan Smith, and so far Texas Tech's kind of been a little Jekyll and Hyde. They're 3-0 at home. They're 0-2 on the road. They have four total turnovers in those three home games that they've won. They've committed eight turnovers in two road games. And so Donovan Smith has been kind of a boom or bust guy. When he doesn't turn the ball over, Texas Tech's been really hard to beat. They've been excellent. When he does turn the ball over, Texas Tech isn't good enough to overcome that stuff. And so it's still year one for Joey. We got to remember, this is a Texas Tech program that hadn't had a winning record in the Big 12 since Mike Leach left. And so, they've struggled for a long time, and it feels like finally in Lubbock, they're excited about who their head coach is.
Yeah, I remember there's a quarterback coach said a long time ago, he's one of those QBs that the band's going to play. I was like, whose band? He said, that's the problem. We don't know if their band's going to play. Or it's our band's going to play. Speaking of QBs, and this is one of the most exciting under-the-radar games this week. Could be 100 points, UTSA and Western Kentucky. Tell me I can ask you about Frank Harris, because that is another really fun-looking quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to maybe the most famous journalist from UTSA. I say that because I think I might be the only journalist ever from UTSA. Frank Harris has been awesome. UTSA is on pace to have three different wide receivers with 1,000 yards receiving this year. They got three guys averaging 98 yards a game or more. Frank Harris has been excellent. What's awesome for Frank is he almost gave up football. He had a really bad injury his senior year of high school. He had a different bad injury his freshman year of college, and there was concerns that his body just wasn't going to hold up. He was more of a runner than a thrower coming out of high school. Jeff Traylor, the head coach there, says he's the most improved player he's ever coached in his life from high school up. And so just a really great success story for Frank Harris. UTSA is definitely the favorite to win Conference USA again. And just amazing for a program in its 11th year playing football, how quickly it's become a relevant name here in the state.
And he's not the biggest fella in the world. Has height changed enough in the NFL that he gets a – because I don't think he's an NFL prospect, and that's another reason that a lot of guys look around when they get to be juniors or seniors, and if there's been injuries or other reasons, then they go, this just ain't worth it anymore. I've told people, I was like, watch them when they take the field against Western Kentucky. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I don't know if he's an NFL prospect either. He's not, the prototypical stand in the pocket, 6'4", throw it down the field type of guy. He'd have a hard time taking the beating of the NFL. But with the COVID year and the medical redshirt and the redshirt he got early on, a little talked about thing here is, Frank Harris can come back for a seventh year. He can become Dr. Frank Harris if he'd like to at UTSA. And so a lot of guys around the country are going to have that decision again this year. The super seniors aren't gone. It's going to take a couple years to kind of cycle out that extra year. He's a guy that gets to decide, hey, do I want to go test the NFL waters, see what that happens there, maybe the Canadian League, XFL. Yeah. Do I want to stay? What's nice about NIL, and I know we only talk about the negative stuff with NIL for the most part, but what's nice about the NIL is these dudes don't have to choose between money and pros anymore. They can make some money even at UTSA, and so maybe that makes his decision a little bit easier as well.
Yeah, I've always said kickers, that's the big position, because you can be a college hero with no hope of the NFL. Kickers, they're the ones who can really have a chance to cash in on something like this. And Frank Harris got to be along with that as well. And you're right, he does have the option at least to come back. So, Mike, appreciate you coming on as always, brother. Thank you.
Anytime, guys.
All right, tried to bounce around a lot of the state there. I think it is 12 Division I programs. There's only 131. I think 12 of them are in the state. That's the number in the state there with Texas State and Baylor and all the rest of them. But the reason I bring that up again is it is this Saturday it's an afternoon game. I think it's a 3:30 or a 4. But if you can find Western Carolina and UTSA, and I'm going to guess here, this reeks of CBS College Sports Channel. And if you are looking on the crawl, and you see it's 31-30 right before halftime, just check in. It could be points aplenty, and so that's what you get. But I always appreciate Mike coming on. Again, talking college football throughout the state of Texas. And, again, I mean, I didn't ask him specifically, and I meant to, about Daryl Dickey. He's still on staff. I hadn't seen him be fired. I mean, I will Google to see if I missed this, but that was the response. And this is an unaffiliated, not media or anybody else, just fan. When Jimbo gonna fire himself as play caller? I was like, now he is play caller. Someone else, when's he gonna fire himself as OC? I was like, all right, see, now that's not true. He has somebody who is listed as OC and quarterback's coach. But Jimbo's in charge. And there are some situations, and when you're dealing with young offensive linemen, you can kind of show out at a lot of other spots. Evan Stewart's doing it at wide receiver. He's a freshman wide receiver. He's showing something. We see freshman quarterbacks and corners and all that. Freshman offensive lineman or redshirt freshman offensive lineman or second-year offensive lineman, it is not the easiest thing, especially in this conference. And when you go on the road against Alabama, it is not a scenario where necessarily everything's going to turn around. So whatever your questions or thoughts are regarding Texas A&M and specifically their offense and ability to block up front, whatever it is you believe right now on Tuesday, you are not going to feel differently about it in a good way on Saturday. What I want you to keep in mind is what you think now is probably closer to true, because Saturday is going to be really, really bad for them. And that's because Saban looks around and says, all right, blood in the water. I see an opportunity. And Nick Saban and Bam, what happened against Arkansas? They beat a really good team on the road. What's going to happen against Texas A&M? They're going to beat a team that's struggling, and they're going to send them home at 500. And A&M still has the rest of its conference slate to play. And by the way, they could have lost to Auburn. LSU. And they still have LSU at the end of the season. Who we don't know what they are, not at this point. We have Ole Miss, who remains undefeated, and I have a growing opinion about them, but I'm still not ready to commit that this is going to be a season without a track team on the outside. And they don't have anybody who's emerged. Arkansas is the team that is already suffering that round-robin thing, because despite the struggles with the overall record, Texas A&M still has talent on the roster, just hadn't come together yet. Beat Arkansas. And Arkansas is looking around thinking, wait a minute, this is a really good addition of what we want to achieve. This is the goal. Sam Pittman says, yeah, things appear to be on track. I think Arkansas is 3-3 after Saturday. They go on the road to Starkville. So Arkansas, Sam Pittman would have, this is what the SEC West is. Sam Pittman says, yeah, things are going according to plan. What's going to be your record after Saturday? Might be 3-3. Same thing I'm talking about, Texas A&M. Jimbo, you got the recruiting in place? Got the facilities? Got the money? Got the second contract? Things seem to be going along pretty well. Hey, what's your record going to be when you go to sleep Saturday night? Probably 3-3.
Oh.
So it's just, I mean, we think about the SEC West in terms of the classic, well, it's Alabama and Auburn and LSU. It's not really what it is now. It's a lot of teams that look B+, maybe A- as a ceiling. This does not look like the classic East, where you had Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee all kind of bouncing around at that 10 or 11 win. You've had that in the West as well. It is starting to look less like that right now. A lot of B and B+ programs, and then maybe Alabama's king. All right, we're going to break, wrap up on this Tuesday next.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
You go in, they scored, all right? Really, that's the momentum that they've got. And when you come at halftime, you got to find a way to get that back. You come back out in the field, they may have the ball again. You got to recover quickly, hopefully go 3-and-out, get the ball back to your offense, and give yourself a chance from that standpoint.
Brian Harsin explaining what did not happen with Auburn. As we wrap up this Tuesday show and begin tilting toward the next week's games, Auburn loses at home to LSU in a tough fall game. They were up 17-0 and lost 21-17. And it started with sort of a weird, it very well could have been the correct call. Dan, take your LSU dumb out of this, and I'll take my Auburn dumb out of this. It very well could have been the correct call. The rule, the phrasing is the empty hand going forward. That means that it was a fumble, not a pass, and I have no problem with that. But that's what started all that with Robbie Ashford, and then Auburn didn't score. And could have had a field goal at some point, could have had a touchdown at another point, could have played defense, made a play elsewhere. Didn't happen. So I don't want to overspeak this because this is going to be an extreme case. And if you go back and look at, and that's Brian Harsin saying, you know, this was the idea, but then it just didn't occur that way. So again, I don't want to assign failure overall because, I mean, my gosh, we're five games into it. But I remember if you go back to the 08 season, I'd mentioned this game, and I said 12. It was actually 13. Auburn got up 13-0 on Vanderbilt back in 2008, and it was week six. And at that point, Auburn is cruising at 4-1, had a bitter loss to LSU at home, 26-21. Beat Tennessee. Here are Auburn's scores, 34-0, 27-13, 3-2, 26-21, 14-12. And I said, this is trouble brewing. 4-1, and that's good, but that defense, this was the team that I was referring to earlier in the show, that I was like, that defense is not going to last. It's just not. Then there was a 13-0 lead against Vanderbilt that turned into a 14-13 loss, and so you see how this was going to unfold. And so Auburn winds up with a 5-7 record, and it's time for Tommy to get gone, and so that happens. There was a lot of talent on that defense. There's talent on this defense as well. But, and it happened as well, I want to say, the Kyle Frazier year. What would that have been, 2011? So, or 12, actually. So, there are times where, and just in, it happens all over college football, but specifically, I said when we had Jason Caldwell on, that the Auburn fan may have some recollection of this. Because there's been multiple times where you looked at the defense and thought, wait a minute, I like some of those guys. Hey, offense, help us out a little bit. And Auburn right now, as far as generating, we talked to the interceptions. They got one. It was defensive lineman, Derek Hall on the tip pass on the offensive line. And Derek Hall squeezing it. So good job by him. He's best player on the defense. But as far as pressuring quarterbacks consistently, they've done a pretty good job of that. Got to make the big play. It's going to fall on them going forward. And the idea that Auburn's going to roll into Athens and the offense would get you a win, the only chance I could give you is it's a distracted Georgia team or an underperforming Georgia team like you saw against Missouri, and then Auburn is able to make some of the bigger plays that they haven't consistently made on defense. I don't look at offense and see that as a path for Auburn this coming weekend. The path is Georgia continues to sort of approach the season in a casual manner, and then Auburn makes some huge plays defensively. That could happen. I don't think it's going to. This is too much series. It's got too much recognition with the Georgia players. This is not going to be like playing Missouri on the road. This is going to be at home against the Deep South's oldest rivalry. So that's the path, but I just don't see it likely. Dan, how you doing today?
Matt House, that's how he's doing, is he is up. He is probably a guy that if LSU continues to put together late first half, yeah, early second and all throughout the second half performances like they have against Auburn and then against Mississippi State a couple of weeks ago, then soon enough, some of these head coaching openings that you're hearing about, you're going to hear Matt House's name named in there, because it's been pretty impressive how they've looked at those points of the game. I think that you can point to the beginning of the game on Saturday night and say Auburn just had a hell of a script and they executed it and they made it happen And all of a sudden you looked up and you said, how the hell is LSU down by 17? But then all of a sudden they didn't panic. They get the scoop and score touchdown there and are able to get things going, because it sure as hell wasn't the passing game. And you even heard Brian Kelly on Monday talk about that as well, saying, 85 yards total passing. I don't care if it's Nussmeier. I don't care if it's Daniels. I don't even care if we have to break the glass and put Walker Howard out there. That is not going to get it done. And I think he's especially talking about what's ahead. By the way, too, surprised to already see Tennessee only a 3-point favorite in this one. I would have thought 6 or 7, maybe, that you'd be looking at Tennessee for this one, just on their offense alone. I'm trying to figure out what Vegas knows.
Yeah, Matt House, he's been in the league a couple of different spots, so he knows what Sundays is. He can talk about that on the recruiting trail. Been in the SEC, Kentucky of late, so really good hire and certainly producing down there as DC. Wraps it up on a Tuesday, folks. Back this time tomorrow with more college football conversation for you.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right, you can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly, because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.